From Toronto, Canada, this is 1 Megahertz, an Apple II podcast. In this episode, discs and disc images fly back and forth with two new ways to get stuff onto your Apple II, and our favorite vintage computer gains new life as a dumb terminal. Also, I listen to some Apple II music and play a well-known classic game that inspired everybody. Except me. All that, plus I get ready to head down to Kansas City on a new two-wheeler, coming up on 1 Megahertz for July 2007. Welcome to 1 Megahertz, 8-bit Apple news and 2-bit Apple reviews. I'm wearing Carrington Vanston's underwear. Thanks for listening. Just a quick episode this month, I think. I'm sort of rushing it out because this weekend I'm heading off to Kansas Fest. Yeah, I'm finally going to the big KF. What are the odds that I come back and say, wasn't worth the wait? Probably not. I anticipate that fun will abound. But before the bounding, let's take a look at, or in your case, a listen to, what's new in the world of old Apples. For instance, ADT Pro 1.0.0 has officially been released. Officially. According to the press release, ADT Pro has two main purposes in life. One, to transfer disk images, and two, bootstrapping Apples when boot diskettes are long gone. Wow, that just gave me a flashback reading that. Years ago, like 15 years, I guess. I was crazy about this gal named Mary. She always smelled of lilac and powder. Anyway, she later had a book of poetry published called Bootstrapping Apples. Actually, it was Bootstrapping Apples on the Road to Redemption. Oh, I haven't thought of that in years. Funny, it never occurred to me at the time that it could be taken as a computer reference. You'd think that'd be the first thing I'd thought of. Nope. Fell down another memory gopher hole. I tend to do that a lot when recording these podcasts, huh? So, anyway, where was I? ADT Pro. So, what is ADT Pro good for? Well, it's good for transferring Apple II disks and disk images from your modern PC to a real Apple II. It's open source software, and it works with just about any Apple II disk or disk image format. DOS, ProDOS, CPM, Pascal, you name it. Or, at least, I assume it does. Way back near the beginning of 1 Megahertz, over a year ago now, I was going to review it, but I just couldn't get it to work at all. I thought it was working, but in the end it did bupkis for me. But it is highly reviewed by people who are clearly better at this sort of thing than I am, although that doesn't take much. Plus, it's now out of beta, so I should probably give it another shot. It does sound terribly useful. It comes in two parts. There's host software, which runs under Java on a modern PC, and there's an Apple II client that runs on any Apple II compatible with at least 64K of memory. Now, it's got a great feature, again, supposedly, that gets you out of a catch-22 that a lot of people who come back to the Apple II after a while will find themselves in. They'll have an Apple II, maybe something they've kept in an attic or picked up at a thrift shop, but they won't have any software on disk, not even a copy of DOS. So they can't even boot the Apple. They can find lots of disk images on that internet thing that all the kids are talking about, but of course, very few modern computers can write or read Apple II disks, or often any floppies at all. So they can't create the disks, and since they can't boot the Apple, they can't even set it to receive the disk images by serial transfer. So it's a conundrum. But like I said, ADT Pro has a nifty feature to get you out of that predicament. You just run the ADT Pro host software on your PC, and it can boot your Apple II remotely. Yeah, it'll boot from bare metal. That is keen, folks. That's what that is. And then with the Apple II up and running, you can use ADT Pro to transfer your downloaded disk images over to the Apple so you can write them out to disk. ADT Pro can talk to your Apple II via the Super Serial Card, a 2GS modem port, 2C serial port, an Ethernet card, or, and I like this one, the Apple's cassette port. That's pretty cool. It works with all the Apple disk image formats that I'd ever heard of, and the Java-based host software will run on macOS 10, Linux, and even Windows. ADT Pro is the brainchild of David Schmidt, who also borrowed the brains of Paul Guertin and Steve Googler and, well, a bunch of other people's brains, but my notes aren't very complete. Anyway, David did a bunch of work, and he stood on the shoulders of others, and together they've come up with something that seems pretty cool. Or at least I assume it is. I will try my hand at it again, because I have a bunch of disk images that I'd love to transfer over to my 2E, and when I do, I'll let you know how it goes. In the meantime, you can check it out for yourself. ADT Pro is available now at adtpro.sourceforge.net, and I'll instruct my tiny invisible podcasting elves to chisel the link into the big stone tablets that I like to call the show notes. In other file transferring news, have y'all heard of the Blue Flash? Now this thing is cool. It combines a Disk 2 controller, a compact flash card slot for disk image archiving, and, wait for it, Bluetooth wireless connectivity. Yes, wireless file transfer for Apple IIs. Jinkies. It's not for sale yet, alas, but it's expected to cost about $160 US, plus the cost of a Bluetooth USB dongle. About 10 bucks or so. I'll have a link to the Blue Flash site so you can read all about it and see the nifty pictures and salivate. It looks like this will be a must-have item. I'm not sure when it's going to be coming out, and the details, they are considerable from a technical standpoint on the website. They are remarkably lacking from a timeline standpoint. Hopefully sooner rather than later, because I would love to get my hands on something like this. In other news, another thing that caught my eye so far this month is a blog post by Paul Weinstein, or Weinstein. I'm never sure how the EIN names are supposed to be pronounced. Anyway, it's called Apple Hacking for Fun and Profit. The post is about how to use an Apple II as a terminal for a Macintosh running OS X. It shows in detail how to make the serial connection between an Apple II and a modern Mac, which ain't all that obvious since Macs haven't actually had serial ports for many a year. The process is a little convoluted. In the author's words, quote, "I have to admit, running a virtual terminal program on the Mini to get another terminal manager program to communicate to a third piece of terminal emulation software just so the 2C can act as a dumb terminal is a bit awkward." Quote. But that said, I think the results are terrific. In my own home setup, I've got a Mac Pro sitting beside an Apple IIe, so I foresee myself going through these steps when I return from Kansas Fest. I think having the 2e act as a dumb terminal for my Mac sounds nifty. I can't wait. Well, actually, can wait, will wait, because I'm heading south this weekend, but when I return, my 2E should see itself doing double duty, if all goes well. Another neat thing to check out online this month is Simon Williams' 8-Bit Sound and Fury website. Simon's been messing with Apple IIs for about 5 years and has been making music with them. He not only made some excellent tunes on the Apple II, he even has a website dedicated to Apple II music, along with some music-related programs. As Earl Evans would say, good stuff. First up, the Serial Dub EP by Framebreaker is a collection of 8-bit dub techno reggae music played on a 1979 Apple II Plus computer. Now here's a sample from the title track, Serial Dub. Pretty keen, huh? I found the whole EP to be really catchy and to actually get even better with multiple listenings. I really like it. The EP was created as an entry into the January 2007 Old Computer Challenge. Now, Simon's also got a full-length CD available online for download called Geometry for Lovers, in which he interprets mathematically derived compositions by Jay Warden. This Jay Warden S. Williams collection is jazz fusion mixed with industrial. I wasn't as big of a fan of these ones as I was of the Framebreaker EP, because these ones seemed a little less, musical, I suppose, but then again, I don't get a lot of jazz either. Here's a sample from my favorite track on the CD called Malls Without Drugstores. Links to both the Serial Dub EP and the Geometry for Lovers CD, which are available for download under a Creative Commons license. You can download the music files in MP3, FLAC, or Ogg Vorbis format, as well as nabbing complete CD artwork packages and playlists. It's a pretty impressive production. Now, as if that wasn't all enough, Simon also drew my attention to his 8-Bit Sound and Fury website, which is a site dedicated to Apple II sound and music software. There you can find info about Apple II music hardware, links to download software, Apple II programming examples, and of course, a big basket of audio. Again, good stuff. Run, don't walk to the show notes for all the linky goodness. And so that's it for news and new stuff this month, I think. As for reviews, I don't have much by way of new software to talk about, because since the last show, the only game I've played for a significant time is my ongoing campaign of Wasteland. It's still kicking butt. Well, mostly it's kicking my butt, and I'm just loving it. I hope to have the game finished by the next show, so I can tell you all about it in detail. I did have a chance to play a classic game called Apple Panic. I only have the disc for this one, no box or instructions to tell you about, but it was pretty easy to figure out. According to the Moby Games site, Apple Panic was created by the same fellow who authored Frogger, Olaf Lübeck. However, the splash screen on the copy that I have agrees with the Apple Panic write-up on Wikipedia, that it was programmed by somebody named Ben Serkey. It was published for the Apple II in 1981 by Broderbund, who also released it the next year for IBM PC compatibles, the Atari, and the Commodore VIC-20. It's a puzzle platform game, a climbing game, really. It's similar in appearance to Lode Runner, though I guess it actually has just as much in common with Donkey Kong. Apple Panic was basically a clone of an earlier coin-op arcade game called Space Panic, which was itself generally considered to be the first platform game. In the UK, and perhaps other parts of Europe, Acorn Soft released a clone of Space Panic called Monsters for the BBC Micro and the Acorn Electron. That game also came out in 1881, but I believe it came out shortly after Apple Panic, which makes Apple Panic technically the first platform game for a home microcomputer. The next year, in 1982, the Dragon 32 saw yet another clone in a game called Bonka, and the TRS-80 Coco, I had one of those, had yet another Space Panic clone, this time called Cuthbert Goes Digging. Space Panic and its derivatives were clearly an influence on later platform games such as Donkey Kong, Miner 2049er, and Lode Runner. Now those are all games, I might add, which are much more fun to play than Apple Panic. But let's look at the game. It's pretty straightforward. Your avatar is a little fellow climbing around a series of platforms and ladders. Your foes are apples. Yes, apples, which slide around the maze looking for you. To be honest, though, they don't seem to do much looking. They just sort of slide around in their own movement pattern, and if they happen to bump into you, then you lose a life. You start with 3 lives, and each level has a time limit in which you must dispatch the on-screen nasties. Now, those nasties don't really look much like apples, even if we make allowances for the graphics available in 1981. They're little red blobs with what looked like blue wings sticking out the top. The wings move up and down as the apples slide about. I guess the wings are supposed to be leaves, but if that's the case, then making them blue was an interesting choice. There are actually three different enemies. There's the original red blobs with blue wings or leaves or whatever, and in later levels there are green and blue blobs, which are harder to kill. You dispatch an enemy much the same way you would in something like Loadrunner, by digging a hole for the baddie to fall into. Now, unlike Loadrunner, though, you kill the apples by pounding them into the ground with your shovel once they get stuck in a hole. The green and blue bad guys are harder to kill since they have to be dropped through two or three holes dug one on top of the other on different levels. It's kind of tough to do, and frankly, I got to the point where I couldn't be bothered. I lost interest in Apple Panic pretty quickly. Not because of the graphics or sound, but because the gameplay just isn't that fun. There are a lot of coin-op games from 1980 and 81 that I think are really fun to play. I mean, 1980 is the year that saw the release of Pac-Man and Battlezone, Berserk, Missile Command, Rally X, Xevious. It's the year of Wizard of War. So, you know, it had that going for it. Now, I haven't played the coin-op game Space Panic. Maybe it would rock my socks. I don't know. But Apple Panic, it ain't no Wizard of War, you know? So I'm giving it a thumbs down. It seems to be immensely popular with other people, but I just don't see why. This definitely is not the game to show your kids if you're trying to convince them that old-school computer games are just as fun as that newfangled stuff. And that's it. Just the one review and, unfortunately, a thumbs down. And that just wraps it up for this episode. As I said, this weekend I'll start heading south towards Kansas City for the 2007 incarnation of Kansas Fest. Am I excited? Oh, you could say that. Last episode, I told you that I was thinking of picking up a new two-wheeled vehicle. I'd been away from motorcycling for a while and I was missing it. But I was torn between getting a new motorcycle or perhaps picking up a Vespa this time. And since y'all often write in after the episodes, I figured I'd ask your opinion. About 30 people or so wrote in with an opinion about what I should get, and it was unanimous. Every single person who wrote in and expressed an opinion said get the Vespa. Kind of surprised me, actually, but we seem to share the same mindset, you and I. Or maybe it's just that us vintage computer nerds have all given up the idea of trying to be cool. I don't know. Because anyway, I did indeed get the Vespa. It's a 250cc GTS, and I'm digging it huge. It's generally easier to ride than a motorcycle because of the low center of gravity, and the twist and go, no shifting stuff is great for stop and go city traffic. I do, unfortunately, almost keep grabbing a fistful of rear brake when I forget that I don't have a clutch, but I'm sure I'll break that habit before I break my neck. I've owned it for a little under 2 weeks now, and I put about 1,000 kilometers on it running around the city. I want to get the first service out of the way before hopping on it and trying to ride the 3,500 kilometer round trip journey down to Kansas City and back. But yes, indeed, I've decided to take the Vespa to Kansas Fest. It'll be an adventure. A slow, winding adventure, but an adventure nonetheless. I hope to see many of you down there at the event, and for those who can't join in the fun this year, you can look forward to me telling you all about the amazing stuff that you missed out on. In a future episode, I'm going to rub it in. But that's it for this month. Thank you so much for listening. I look forward to hearing from you about your own Apple II adventures and other vintage computer shenanigans. And I'll talk to you again in about a month. See ya. You've been listening to 1 Megahertz, the Apple II podcast. Feedback and suggestions can be sent by email to feedback@monsterfeet.com. All the files and links mentioned in this episode can be found in the show notes in the 1 Megahertz section of the monsterfeet.com website. And like all Monsterfeet podcasts, all the original material in this episode is released to the public domain.